Welcome to Utopian AF, the podcast, where we examine a different component of our world, how it exists today, and how it could evolve to benefit everyone. This episode, we will continue our discussion about domestic pets and how we could coexist in Utopia together. I'm your host, John.
And I'm your host, Patrick.
And welcome once again to Utopian AF, the podcast.
Last episode, we talked about domestic pets and how we kind of see them in our current society.
Quick recap, although many people do consider their pets to be family, our pet laws and animal regulations treat them mostly as property.
Not to mention, we talked about breeders too, animal shelters.
Living conditions and breeder conditions, yeah.
So now we need to talk about how should animals be treated in Utopia, right?
With the utmost respect.
We should treat them like all of the sacred animals in the various religions.
One of the ideas that's out there is, should animals be tamed? Should they be pets? And although that is a really good thing to think about, at this point, I don't know if there's much else we can do about animals that are already domesticated. They wouldn't survive in the wild. And honestly, I think sharing a home with a pet and incorporating them in a family dynamic is very healthy for the quality of life for both the pet and the owner, if we're going to use current terminology.
I think that's true to an extent. I think there are people who have pets that don't necessarily see them as equal, right? There are certainly a lot that do, that see them as an extension of their family.
I'm sure, cases. Definitely not everyone.
Some see them as their kids, you know. It's tricky because we have to factor in for both of those groups.
So tell me a little bit more about the second group. So we're talking about people that view them as property and not family.
Yeah.
I don't really know how to accommodate for that. I mean, I think that's a thing that they would just sort of do on their own.
It's a public perception thing, right? What we would have to ask, and we probably should have asked in the previous episode, is, why do people get pets in the first place?
That is a good question.
For some people, it's companionship. In some cases, it's because maybe they can't have kids or they are utilitarian in that they kill animals that may harm livestock, etc. I think that's a really interesting question, though, because not only are you asking why do people get pets, but you're also asking why do they get those specific breeds or species of pets? Why do you get a cat versus why do you get a dog?
I would say probably the first reason I can think of people getting pets is because they want an addition to their life or even to their family. And I think people also tend to be a little collecty.
Yeah.
We like to collect things. And when we think of animals as things, it's easy to sort of get into the mindset of wanting to collect one or even collect many. And when we start thinking about things we like to collect, we start thinking about the details of those things. Like when you're going to get a car, you think about, which car do I want to get? What color do I want to get?
Always get the heated seats, though.
That's a good tip.
Yeah. That's free.
I think that is the mindset, whether it's conscious or not, behind wanting to get a pet. I think also in some cases, an animal may drop in their lap somehow. They're just sort of presented with this option of, hey, there's this kitten or there's this puppy that you just stumbled across and it's kind of just left for dead. And then they kind of just wind up with a pet without intending to.
I think that's probably especially true of cats, right? I mean, that's just my perception because they're not about this domestic life. They're trying to get in touch with their tiger roots, you know?
Not my cat.
You say that.
She's a potato. She wants to be cradled and fed. She's not going to get that in the wild, and she knows it.
I definitely think there are instances where you just kind of stumble across one. I think that's what you were trying to say, or what you were saying.
Another reason I can think of is just sometimes people want to feel affection. They want to feel connection. And even if you don't realize it, you might think you're getting a thing to make you feel better, but you're actually developing a connection and a relationship with someone.
Certainly. I mean, I'm sure you have the same moments with Powder, or maybe not so much Ramsey, but Powder for sure, where it's like, I feel like I understand you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's often what people kind of chase, is like, I want to have that all the time with any being. It doesn't have to be an animal.
And I think that might be why dogs are the most popular pet, because it's the easiest one to achieve that with. And cats, you can definitely achieve that, but you have to work at it. Cats are more complex. They want things on their terms, and you have to kind of learn that. Whereas dogs, it's on your terms. That's totally fine. You were talking about having a connection, feeling a connection with a pet. And as you know, I mean, I'm not exactly a big fan of snakes. Snakes always freaked me out. It wasn't until I actually was able to hold Saturn and kind of get a sense of his personality. And that's when I love that snake. He's great. He's so friendly. He's super cool. He's very chill. He's curious. He's a little explorer. He has a personality. It's just, it's crazy.
What if he's setting you up to kill you in your sleep, though?
I don't think he has those thoughts. I think he just kind of sees me as like a biological tree. I mean, I don't think he's scared of me most of the time. I mean, once he's out and he realizes it's safe, he's very social.
I'm not sure that I have a problem with snakes per se. I certainly respect them.
I respect them for the most part. I don't want to touch them. The ones that are that bite, I'm good. I'm okay.
With cats and dogs, though, I think that they feel familiar versus like a snake, where that thing can move in ways that you don't move.
Yeah.
I think that freaks people out a little bit.
Yeah. It feels a bit alien if you're not used to it. When it crawls on you or slithers on you, or, you know, you can feel those muscles tighten around you. Like when it wraps around your arm and it's hanging on there with its body weight. It's like holding onto your arm with the tightness and the muscles of its body.
I know we've probably freaked out a portion of the audience.
I'm just a leathery snake.
So, yeah, there's a multitude of reasons why people get pets. I think it is not uncommon, though, for people to get pets to be an extension of their family. Maybe we need to look up the percentage. I don't even know if they can quantify that.
I tried looking. I couldn't find anything.
But I think that when we talk about utopia, treat our pets and our animals with respect the same way we think about them. Not just thinking about it, but doing it.
The idea behind a utopia is quality of life for everyone. Now, when we say everyone, we generally think humans, but it's easy to disregard the animals, even though we have a responsibility for the quality of their life. It's a give and take relationship. I think you can still have them as family. You go through a process like you would with adoption, and the ways in which they're bred isn't based off of capitalism. It's based off of quality of life for both the animal and the people that will be housing it. So potentially you can even consider weeding out aggressive breeds.
So
I'm not saying we should. I'm just saying that could be a topic that could be discussed.
That sounds an awful lot like eugenics, John.
It does. But I mean, once upon a time, somebody would have said, that sounds a lot like socialism, you know? It's not really about what something is, I think. I think it's about what it's being used for.
That's a valid point, to play devil's advocate. I mean, we probably should have established this in the first episode, but we need to flesh it out now. In order for us to say, in utopia, pet ownership is no longer a thing.
Okay.
And by extension, breeding pets is no longer a thing. I think because we're referring to domestic pets, there's no viable way, at least in a short-term situation, for us to say that all these animals are free now.
Like you're going to put the chihuahuas out in the woods and be right. Like, goodbye. The hawks are going to be like, fuck yeah, buddy. Humans are definitely warming up to my plate.
That's how it would go, because they're domestic pets.
I would say that if the decision was made that there will be no more pet ownership, pets, things like that, we're just doing away with it. There's wild animals and there's humans now. I probably would say you would do that over time. You start by putting a law in place for breeding these animals and the ones that currently exist, now these are the only ones you can get as pets. Yep. We need homes for the animals that exist now. If you want to have a pet, you got to grab one of the ones that exist, because after they die, that's it. Then so, you're back to the genetics thing. That, what did you call it?
Eugenics.
Eugenics, yeah. But if you're just going to throw the chihuahuas outside and let them fend for themselves anyway, and they can't, then you're essentially doing that anyway. You're just kind of, you know, it's sort of, there's a gray area and everything.
I believe they would try. I think a chihuahua would try and fight a bear.
He would try. But like I know I said, Norm would. They still won't last long. And that's the point I'm trying to make.
We basically took wolves, right? When it comes to dogs, we took wolves, and I just looked it up. There's evidence going back 30,000 years that we domesticated the dog.
Right. We own that dog.
So we basically gave them a 30,000 year disadvantage.
Right.
To fight a bear.
We used evolution against them to be our little bitches, and now they are. I think pet family ship. It's a good utopian name.
I like that.
We're going to go with pet family ship. I think pet family ship could be a very healthy thing in a utopian society, because it can be really good for mental health for people. And in a situation where the animal is given a strong quality of life and love and affection and food and taken care of, and even, you know, a good life where it gets to explore and things like that, you know, it's a win-win.
Yeah, for sure. Funny story. I tried to buy Norman high-priced dog food.
I don't know why, but I thought you were going to be like, I tried to buy Norman a hoe. He's like, which one you want? You want to pick that one out? I'm going to buy that one.
Norm is probably asexual. But no, I tried to buy him the higher priced dog food thinking I want him to live longer. I want him to also eat good stuff, you know, because I myself do not.
Right. Meanwhile, I'm getting the Red Bull.
Yeah. I got a 1 liter Dr. Pepper by me and a beer. So I ended up buying him this dog food, and I pour it into his bowl, and I'm thinking, oh man, he's just going to go to town on this. That motherfucker took one bite, or sniffed it for a couple minutes, took one little piece of dog food, and then spit that fucking thing back out.
Right. Because you know what you did? You were giving that dude cheeseburgers, and then suddenly you gave him a vegan salad. And he's like, the fuck?
That's what we ended up deciding.
This is why dogs have consciousness. That's how I would react.
That's exactly how I see it, because that was the first thought I had, is like, we just gave him pizza or cheeseburgers.
Right. Now he's eating a plate full of tofu. Like, and you're like, what?
Thanks for the kale, Bob.
What are these, chickpeas?
What is a chickpea?
You want me to eat a whole bowl of quinoa?
What I'll say is that quality of life should matter when it comes to pet ownership. And I think we touched upon it in the previous episode, but when you adopt a pet from a shelter, you do get asked a couple of questions, but those questions aren't necessarily designed with the animal in mind.
It is, but it's more of the business side of, we want to eliminate returns.
There could be like home inspections.
It should be like adopting a child, in the sense that we want to make sure that there's a good quality of life for both. Is this person fit enough to take on the responsibility of a cat or dog or whatever?
Hi, devil's advocate again.
Yes.
I raise my hand too. The only issue I see with vetting a person to have a animal companion, we'll call them, is that, as you mentioned earlier, a lot of people who have mental health issues that rely on the support of a service dog, or it's almost like you need therapists involved to make that assessment. Say you start a new job working at an animal shelter, and your job is going to people's homes, checking out their environment, having a conversation with them. You're not necessarily qualified to say this person is mentally well enough to take care of a dog. You know what I mean? What I'm getting at is, you pretty much have to establish a new set of criteria for what qualifies somebody as responsible enough for a dog,
right,
or a cat or whatever.
Right. And those are things that you would just have to kind of work out as a collective. So if you're listening to this and you have ideas on that, I'd love to hear them. Put them in the comment section. Let's talk about it.
We like to talk with you guys, not so much each other. We fucking hate that. So I think we're kind of on the same page in terms of our thoughts, John, about the idea that we can't outright dismiss pet familyship?
Pet familyship, yeah.
Which I'm in favor of.
I think it's a good title.
There is something special about humans and animals coexisting in a way that is family oriented.
Yeah. I believe that's the only way it should be. But I mean, that's my personal belief. I know that there is the concept of using animals essentially like the Flintstones did, which is for like all the tools and such. They had like some kind of a little goblin dinosaur underneath the kitchen sink that was the garbage disposal. They have like an elephant trunk that is their shower.
But so those are dinosaurs. They don't count.
In my opinion, that falls into the same category as slavery.
Let's talk about the assessment process.
Yeah. Let's assess the assessment process.
Do you think there should be income requirements?
That's a great question. Yes, the financial stability of a person is something that would be taken into consideration, I would imagine. At the same time, in a utopian society, you could have a platform in which there really isn't a poverty level anymore. So technically, anybody probably could afford to participate in pet familyship, but it would have to be evaluated first to ensure stability.
So while you were talking, I had the thought.
So you ever shut the fuck up?
I have that thought all the time, but I feel like the audience knows episode 3 now. I mean, they know. They know what I'm thinking.
They're asking the same thing. Did you ever shut the fuck up? Comment wall is full of just, John, when are you going to shut the fuck up? The answer is right now.
When we start selling merch, hashtag John shut the fuck up is, it's going to be John STFU, but.
That's fine. I get all the commission from that shirt. It's got my name on it.
I had the thought going through my head, why do people give up their pets?
I think they get the pet based off of the endorphins before they put in the thought of the amount of responsibility that comes with it.
Yeah.
And once the whole high of this is new and exciting goes away, they're like, fuck, now I got to deal with this.
I'll be the first to admit that I've had pets in the past where that's been the case. Like, I didn't really know why I was getting a pet. And I've got kids too. So It's like, you kind of want to get a pet so they understand responsibility. And
they're like, damn, now I'm responsible for them and this thing. If they don't feed it, I got to feed it. Son of a bitch.
As I've gotten older, I've definitely gained a lot more respect for the pets. Benji, last night, we let him sleep in the bed. I woke up this morning and I got up. It was like probably 6 o'clock. And whenever I get up, he'll move to my part of the bed and wait for me to come back. So I came back and he's laying in my spot. And I'm like, Benji, move over. So he moves over, but then he like crawls into my arm and I'm like, I'm like holding him like this the rest of the morning, you know, like a baby, essentially. But that's taken me time to kind of see him as equals.
Yeah, I don't really think of it as a lesser or more scale. I just see another conscious being. I don't think, hey, you're better than me or you're worse than me or I guess we're on the same level. You build a relationship with people. You do the same thing with pets and animals, whether it's a good or bad relationship or whatever the case is.
I mean, that's how I try and look at it. But at the same time, I'm practical, right? I know I feed him. I know I have to let him out. I know he's very dependent on me, as much as he may not want to be.
So at that point, the question is, what do you consider equal? Equal as in he can do the same things I can do, because there are things I can do he can't. So maybe he's not an equal.
I would say equal means you have the same right to live.
Yeah, I think there's always the natural combatant, which is, well, that's not what nature says, because there's a lot of things in nature that live off of the death of other things.
I'm just going to point out that we have defied Mother Nature on more than one occasion. Humans are very good at...
They play cards at certain times. You play the innovation card when everybody's like, I like this. This works for me. Does this work for you? This works. Okay, cool, cool. You know what? This is just innovative. This is, you know what? The fact that
it's utopian.
We're natural. So then it's got to be natural. It naturally came from us, you know, whatever. But then the moment it's like, well, you know, why don't we get innovative and stop eating the animals? People are like, it's natural. It's a natural thing. And they use the word natural as a defense mechanism. I don't have to talk about it because it's natural. There's other things that are technically natural that we definitely don't condone in our society.
Such as?
One rhymes with slurder.
Rhymes with what?
It doesn't matter what I said. You know what rhymes with it. That is shit that you probably shouldn't do, but it is natural to do.
As far as reasons why people abandon pets.
Yeah.
First one is it's a time issue. They don't have enough time to spend with that animal.
Okay.
It says it's unfair to leave a pet alone for long periods of time. Agreed. But you should have probably thought of that.
Right. But again, people don't always think things through when they do it. Sometimes you have all the answers and you think you have all the answers, but then it turns out you don't have all the answers.
Future me has already determined this podcast to be wildly successful about 50 years from now.
I hope future you is right.
Me too.
Future me thinks future you's living in a delusion world.
Next is lack of experience. Okay, so I got a story about this.
You have a story about your lack of experience?
Not my lack of experience. Oh. A friend of mine helped this person get a Frenchie because they didn't know necessarily where to go to adopt one. So they adopted the Frenchie and started blowing up my friend's phone. Turns out the person that adopted a Frenchie, now I know you don't really know too much about the breed, but they're one of the most stubborn breeds to train. They do not listen, and that's why they're like kids.
Yeah, they need to be pampered and taken care of.
You basically need to be somebody who has, this is just my opinion, but you basically need to be somebody who has had dogs in the past and knows how to train them in order to survive a relationship with a French bulldog. This person had never had a pet, not just a dog, but never had a pet before getting a French bulldog. So lack of experience is like,
you're jumping to an expert level pet rather than like a beginner's level pet.
Yeah, get a plant first. That's going to be a different episode, by the way.
Plant pets.
Plants are becoming the new pets.
And then one day somebody on a podcast will be like, are plants pets? Do we own plants? They're their own things.
Don't even get me started. I'll go down that hole.
We should stop eating the plants.
We should just stop eating.
We'll find a way to survive off of water.
I don't know. I'm just spitballing here. All right. So lack of experience was the second one. Change life situation. That happens. You relocate for a job. You get divorced. You get married. You have kids, etc. Again, goes back to think before you do, right?
It sounds a lot like the thing I said about basically taking on the pet and then realizing that responsibility is more than you can handle and the endorphin rush isn't there driving you to power through it anymore.
And then you start breaking out the pros and cons list and finding more cons because
you just start thinking, you know, my life would be easier if this motherfucker wasn't here.
Well, that leads into the next point, health and age, which this one, full disclosure, just agitates me. Because you've had this animal for however many years, and now because...
Oh, so by health and age, you mean the health and age of the pet?
Yes.
And that's the reason why this is number what on the list?
No, it's not a numbered list.
It's number whatever you want it to be. It's a fucking list.
Okay, so to use Max as an example, when Max first started having health issues, if he said, oh, I can't deal with this, and you took him to the shelter or you put him up for adoption... Right. You had him how many years before that?
I couldn't imagine. There's no way. I wouldn't know how to do that. That's not a thing I could do. Like, literally, he got to the point where he could not braid his back legs anymore, and he was covered in tumors. He wasn't in pain, but he couldn't do anything else. He was 14 years, 2 or 3 months, and his breed life expectancy was 12 to 14 years. He was maxed out.
I see what you did there.
And obviously the way that I decided to go about it was euthanasia. And we did that in the privacy of our home. And he was laying down, resting on my lap. When it happened, he went in peace and he was surrounded by love. And, you know, I don't know. That makes more sense to me than taking him somewhere being like, well, I can't deal with this anymore.
Right. You
Somebody
do it.
Put him down.
You do it. I'm not going to be around.
I don't know. What's that say about me? Or what's that say about people who can do that? I'd like to know your thoughts. Comment below.
I have a question. regarding that, though.
Yeah.
Let's say that Max, you know, he's 14 years and 2 months, and his breed is only supposed to live up to 14 years. So he's already beat the odds, right?
Right.
If somebody had told you, in order to solve his health problems, we can solve them, but it's going to cost you 10 grand.
Okay.
Like is
now,
there
what do you mean by solve the problems? Like, he's going to live another 10 years?
Yeah. Or, well, say five.
Another 5 years?
Yeah.
Does he get younger or anything like that? Or is he just kind of old and not really moving the way he is now? Because, like,
he's probably going to move the same way.
If that's the case, honestly, it's probably better to just put him down, because his whole life was becoming just laying on his bed and getting up to eat food and drink water. Same. And then just going find another place to lay down. And the energy that it takes him to do that is pretty much where he was capping out. He was having issues, you know, medical issues that were coming one after the next. And it's just, I don't know. In that scenario, I probably wouldn't, and it really wouldn't have done him much good anyway. And who knows where things would be in 5 years? What happens if I die in a year and then there's nobody there to take care of him? In that scenario, I feel like the way he went was peaceful, and I'm happy with it.
It'd be one thing if, like, they told you he could get another 14 years and he's going to act like he's about two.
Yeah, if they're like, hey, we have some thing where basically he takes this pill and he's like a puppy again, and you get to do the whole thing over, but he's still himself and still has his memories or whatever. And he's just, I probably would, honestly. I could see myself doing that.
I know I would. I definitely think you would. I know Max was kind of your buddy.
At the same time, because of the experience I had with him, I probably won't adopt another big dog. Just because there is a lot that goes with that.
What if they could take pet consciousness and, like, upload it to, like, a clone dog?
What would that be like? So they clone him?
If they could figure out, like, how to take your consciousness, like, map it.
Now, would it be a copy of it? Or are you talking about, like, it's the actual consciousness? And how do you know that? The way I would imagine that is you're basically, you're using artificial intelligence and then stapling a copy of your brain onto that so that the AI believes it's you and has your memories, essentially.
Let's shelve this for another time, because
a good movie to watch about that would be, was it Translucent? What's the name of it?
No. Is that with Johnny Depp?
Johnny Depp.
Transcendent.
Transcendent. Yeah. That's a great movie. But that covers that topic.
We are going to be talking about artificial intelligence in a later episode series.
I think AI plays a pretty big role in how you could operate utopia functionality.
Definitely. All right. So we talked about animal health and age, which, ridiculous. Boredom and disinterest.
Yeah.
How do you get fucking bored with an animal?
If you're bored with the animal, it means you're boring. If you ever notice, a lot of people, they're, especially like the dogs, tend to have the personality of the owner.
Mm-hmm. I know exactly who you have in mind for that.
I feel like that is like a common thing across the board. If you're bored of your pet, it means you're looking for the animal to entertain you. Whereas the animal is pretty much looking to you to entertain it. It's like, Right. Okay, I'm here. You wanted me here. I got nothing to do today because you took my whole life and put it inside your living room. So what do you got for me?
At least turn the TV on.
I do that.
I do too.
I think their favorite movie is The Lion King, the live action one.
Yeah.
They'll sit there and watch it. Powder goes to the screen and she watches it. I got video of her like jumping up at the screen when the cats are on.
Norman likes Animal Planet type shows. He likes anything with chimpanzees.
Interesting.
Like, yeah, he's very fascinated by them.
I was watching The Batman on my iPad before I went to bed one night, and Powder came up. And she does a thing where she's always trying to like steal my attention away from the iPad. She tries not like rubbing her face against it, knocking it over, touching the buttons, messing it up. I was watching The Batman and she came over and she just cuddled and just laid next to me. And she was just sitting there staring at the screen. I see the screen. It's The Batman. And then I see a silhouette of the cat. It reminded me of a science movie. What is it? Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for her commentary to just, you know, start popping up.
You mentioned that pets typically have the same personality characteristics of their owners.
Right.
Do you feel like Powder is like that with you? Or because I know Norm, he's like the rule follower, right? Like he inspects everything and he will basically fight the other Frenchies if they get out of line. A little high strung.
I would say Powder is a lot like me in the sense that she's pretty laid back. She likes attention, but she also goes off on her own a lot. Whenever I sit down to like play Xbox, she'll typically go jump on my lap and then she'll hug my arm and try to get me to like play with her and stuff. I think she's aware that I'm putting my attention into something. And she's like, well, since you're, you know, passing out some of that attention, I'm right here, motherfucker.
How dare you spend any time on yourself?
Why don't you go grab me some of that catnip? Because I saw the green you've been playing with in the kitchen. Why don't you hook me up and we can do this shit together?
There's definitely people we know that their animals are just like them and not in a flattering way. But anywho, boredom and disinterest, we talked about that. Unwanted litters. Now, this one I can kind of understand.
What, like if your pets have a litter and you're like, I don't know what to do?
Yeah.
Well,
the argument would be spay and neuter, right?
So I play this game Ark, and in the game, you tame and breed animals such as dinosaurs. You can collect them and use them as to gather resources and shit like that.
That's how they condition you.
They're more like vehicles in the game, but you can breed them. And often people have communities in the game because it's kind of a sandbox game where you can buy a baby dinosaur from somebody or something like that. I'm going to pay you for a baby T-Rex because you have the high level scales. When they do that, the person will typically neuter the baby that you get.
Yeah.
So that you can't breed it because then it takes business away from them. I do think in a utopia, in order to keep the breeding in the sanctioned, regulated breeding areas that are built in order to maintain quality of life for the animals being bred and the ones that are being born, all pets would have to be neutered and spayed. There wouldn't be unauthorized breeding of domesticated animals. And I think, and I could be wrong, I would love to hear other people's opinions. I know it's a thing people want. I want to be able to breed them. I want to be able to just do that. I want to play God because I suddenly it's Tuesday and I'm bored. But that's not a perspective that is considering the quality of life for those animals.
Or other people, to be honest.
Right.
I think one could make the argument, though, that there are such things as ethical breeders.
There are, and that's what...
That's what you're advocating, essentially.
That's exactly what I'm advocating, but you'd have to become a licensed, some kind, regulated, sanctioned, ethical breeder in order to do that job. And you can do that, but you do that through the proper means.
I don't know much about breeders besides just the general principle of how it works, but I'm curious to know if there is any kind of licensing program or certification program. I would imagine there's a certification program for breeders, but I'd be curious to know if that applies to just a specific species.
I believe it's different in different states. Different cities have different regulations on different species and things like that, but I'm not really sure what the licensing process is right now. But I think it's where pretty much anyone can do it. Doesn't take much, maybe a paycheck.
Well, I know like HOAs, homeowners associations, can tell you how many pets you have or don't have. Same with apartments, et cetera. So I feel like there's probably something on the books in terms of the breeding process. And maybe it's also controlled by zoning. So saying like you can't run a business out of your house, for example. It'd be interesting to know if there's one for each typical domestic pet, or if there's one that's a license that encompasses everything, or if there's a regulating body for that. I'd be curious to know that. When we talk about the utopia and how animals will coexist, I think we're both kind of on the same page that we think ultimately we have to shift our perspective, you know, our society's perspective of the role that animals play in our lives.
And the role we play in their lives.
Exactly.
I think if people started seeing it that way, it would make more sense. Everything else kind of starts falling into line. By the way, I kind of did a quick search on puppy mills. We were talking about regulations and such. I just wanted to go briefly over some of the things I found. So here is the Wikipedia definition of a puppy mill, also known as a puppy farm. It is a commercial dog breeding facility characterized by quick breeding and poor conditions. Literally, poor conditions is right there in the definition of what a puppy mill is. And these exist. They commonly exist. Although no standardized legal definition for puppy mill exists, a definition was established in 1984 as a dog breeding operation in which the health of the mill's dogs are disregarded to maintain a low overhead and maximum profit.
That's sickening.
And these exist. They are legal.
Puppy mills are legal?
My dog is from a puppy mill.
Really?
And he's kind of screwed up. Yeah. He has extreme aggression issues when it comes to like guarding, like resource guarding. Now we've been working with him. He's doing a lot better. He goes really good for long periods of time, but every once in a great while, shit just goes wrong. There's no way around it. I mean, we've done some pretty
even
extensive
after the training.
Yeah, with the training and everything. I mean, we haven't had really any issues, but he still gets very growly at certain times. We just had to change habits in our life. Like he's not allowed on beds, couches, things like that, unless he gets permission. And we hardly ever get him permission because the problem is once he's up there, he kind of starts feeling a claim towards it.
Yeah, I don't know definitively that Norm was from a puppy mill, but I know the only issue I've ever had with Norm is resource guarding. But even then, that was early on. He doesn't really do that so much these days.
Ramsey is a lot more mellow than he was very early on, and he's gotten better. And I think, honestly, being around Max helped him out a lot. His whole attitude dropped. Max was a super relaxed dog. He was very chill, not a mean bone in his body. That's also how we got Ramsey to start swimming. Ramsey had a huge fear of water, and we would go out and swim, and Max would come out and swim with us, and he'd see Max go in there with no problem. And then he got more curious about it. And his main vice was his ball. We threw his ball in the water and he eventually went in to get it.
It's funny you mentioned Max swimming because I always looked at Max as like a great white of dogs. You know, like he's just like...
Just a head with a stomach behind it, just looking for the next meal. That sounds like Max. He looked like, when he swam, he looked like a giant otter.
Okay, so to kind of sum up, utopia version of animals is that we're not going to be able to fix those problems all at once overnight, but we need to
have a goal
to change public perception of pet ownership and eliminate hopefully the ownership mentality. And we need to reinforce the idea that ethical breeding should take priority, I would say, over profit.
It shouldn't be about profit anymore. It should be about the quality of life that we are producing.
Right. So next episode, we're going to talk about how do we get from where we're at today to a society that
caters to the quality of life of our, what we say, pet family ships.
Family ships. Yeah. So how do we get from point A to point B?
The question I would like to ask the audience is, what do you think? How do you think a utopian society would look with pet life? Would there be pet life? And if so, how would that life look? Let us know.
You guys know the socials by now, hopefully.
What's the main one we're operating on?
You know, it's a gray area. Facebook.
Probably Facebook. That's probably what I was Facebook. Thinking. Yeah. For more of the comments and things like that.
If you haven't yet, which I will publicly shame you, go out to Facebook, sign up for our group and our page, Utopian AF, the podcast.
Safe place to have open discussions, share ideas, keep positive vibes, and let's just figure this out together.
I want to point out one thing you just said, positive vibes.
This is all hypothetical thoughts and theories. There's no, you know, we're bringing as much facts to the table as we can. We're hoping you'll bring facts to the table, but the key isn't to prove who's right or wrong, because
exactly
we don't really know.
It's like you read my mind, man.
I do that sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah, it's creepy.
Sometimes there's just nothing there to read. It's like a blank page.
I like to think of it as one of those paddle balls, the rubber balls that always broke off, like just bouncing around in a room.
A ping pong ball?
That'll work too.
Just bouncing around.
So on that note, stay tuned. Next episode, we will conclude.
Same pet time. Same pet channel.
Adios.